When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Vernomatic Productions.
Are you ready?
Live from the Metal Mayhem Studios in Rochester, New York.
We are gold.
And heard around the world by metalheads just like you. This is Metal Mayhem ROC.
Heavy metal music.
Your weekly dose of metal music, interviews, album reviews, news, and more.
Want to be part of the show?
Send us a message through our website,
metalmayhemroc.com.
Or hit us up on Facebook and Twitter.
Search Metal Mayhem ROC.
A proud member of the Pantheon podcast team.
It's getting nice and heavy.
Now, welcome our hosts, John the Vernomatic Verno, and direct from New Jersey, Metal Walt.
Good evening, everybody. As always, new content drops on Thursday nights. Well, tonight we're bringing you another edition of our side show called Rock and Roll Detention. And I'm going to be honest with you, it's one of our most intense and passionate episodes we've ever produced. We have two of our Canadian friends on here. We have music critic and rock author Martin Popoff, author of over 115 books and actually 7 or 8 of them exclusively on Rush. He's here along with Perrin Wolfson, a fellow Canadian. Perrin's a digital creator, contributor to the Metal Mayhem ROC Facebook group page, a huge Rush fan and an overall fucking metal brother. Well, they're both here tonight to join myself and Metal Walt. We're taking a deep dive into Rush, and what it is a top 20 deep cut episode. These are the rules. Songs cannot be radio singles. They cannot be videos. They cannot be radio songs. In addition to singles, these are the middle of the album, back album. These are the songs that you totally dig, and we all four of us have our favorites. We've been around forever. Perrin alone in this conversation, I found out, you know, he lived on the West Coast for a few years for work. He was seeing Rush out in the amphitheaters out there. Martin, he's been seeing Rush for years. Myself, I started seeing him in 81. And you know what Metal Walt does with his rock and roll concerts. He's going to 3 of them a week. So when you throw all this together, we have tons of experiences. Listen, you're probably going to listen to this and think that, hey, you forgot a song or that song sucks or whatever. But again, this is our list. And maybe you'll learn something from it that you never even knew. I certainly did. And I'm, you know, and this is my show. But throughout this, I also produced this with Music Beds. We're playing some of these songs that we're talking about. And it really adds audio imagery to the broadcast. And it's fantastic. Really, really proud of this, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. So that's coming up in just a second. But first, I do want to remind you to get up to our website, metalmayhemroc.com. Sign up for the weekly newsletter. It's our way to stay in touch with you about everything we're doing here. Again, Thursday nights, new content drops, the podcast. Friday night, we have our free-for-all YouTube interview show. Monday night, I'm doing a radio show, live radio on Metal Devastation Radio. And the rest of the guys, Bill the Rager, Southern Kale, you know, Ian O'Rourke, they're putting out interviews throughout the week. So, again, get up to metalmayhemroc.com and just sign up for the newsletter. In about 3 weeks, 4 weeks, we're celebrating our 5-year anniversary. Brand new merch page is going to be debuting, so you can get yourself some kick-ass Metal Mayhem ROC gear for the summer 2024. All right, well, let's get into this. Coming up right now, Rush Top 20 Deep Cuts. Metal Mayhem ROC.
Ah, look, you're back in detention.
Got it.
But this time, you won't be throwing pencils up into the ceiling tiles the entire time.
Don't mess with the bull, young man. You'll get the horn.
Your proctors expect you to be on your worst behavior as they give you remedial instruction in the history of hard rock and metal.
You going to school?
Hey, settle down. Here's Vernomatic and Metal Walt with your rock and roll detention.
A proud member of the Pantheon podcast team.
All right, well, tonight we got another edition of our kick-ass sideshow called Rock and Roll Detention. And we're going to the Great White North. We got two Canadians that know their shit about Rush. From the Metal Mayhem ROC podcast group page, top contributor Perrin Wilson and author and fellow Canadian Martin Popoff. Guys, welcome to the show. We're looking forward to this.
Yes, thank you very much. Cool concept. Let's do it.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. I want to introduce you quickly to my co-host. Goes by the name Metal Walt, and he's downstate. Down in New Jersey. He's a tri-state area.
How you doing, Walt? Very cool.
New Jersey's close enough. Honorary Canadian.
Exactly. It's right down 95, depending on if you're by Montreal or by Toronto.
And I love Rochester as well. Rochester's awesome. The whole Kodak thing and that part, and the memorial, the art museum you guys got there.
The Memorial Art Gallery, and we have the Casa Larga wine area. We have the House of Guitars. And, you know, Martin, we're right down the street from your boys, the Buffalo Bills. So both of our regions is a rock destination. So the parameters tonight, what we're going to do, five deep cuts of each. And we've heat and hawed about what is a deep cut. And we've just decided that it's not the video song. It's not the popular song. It's not the single. It's something that is off the beaten path. Perrin, why don't you kick this off and give us your number five?
My number five. Okay, well, seeing that this is Rush and seeing that this is Prague, there needs to be an instrumental in here someplace, right? So I figure, why not have an instrumental as number five? And an amazing Rush instrumental, I think, Latter Day, that doesn't get any credit. Although I thought it got no credit, and then I read today it was actually nominated for Best Rock Instrumental Grammy. But regardless of all of that, not a single, only played on one tour of the album it's from. My number five is the instrumental from Snakes and Arrows, Malignant Narcissism. Rocking instrumental, as good as any instrumental they've ever done. And no one ever talks about it. Maybe because no one talks about that album.
Martin, what do you got? What's your number five?
Well, okay, I was going to go chronological, but that's I like this because we'll build up to my favorite choice. So starting with the least sort of, purpose behind it, I suppose. I'm going to go with Time in Motion from Test for Echo, which I always like because it's very dissonant and minor chordy, and it's kind of King Crimson-y. It's hard hitting. There's some really good, bashing from Neil on here. I think there's as much kind of cool in the pocket combative drumming that you get, in the nooks and crannies of this album that you get even on Clockwork Angels. But there's the kind of arpeggiated guitar. There's this weird little harpsichord kind of part in it as well, or harpsichord-like keyboard kind of part. But just a cool one, good message in it. It's one of these about, chance and the days filling up and all this. There's some really poetic things in there as well. So I think it's one of the more kind of more malevolent sounding songs on an album that's a little too polite.
Spontaneous elation and the longing you wring.
I recall that right, because I'm a concert aficionado, I think they only played that one time on the tour, and that was opening night in Albany.
Wow. Crazy.
Which I was at.
Did you just come up with that off the top of your head, Walt?
No, I got Rain Man concert memory.
Wow. That's good.
I would have thought that was never played live. I would never have thought they would have played that live.
I will double check that before the end of this episode.
All right, what do you got over there, Walt?
Well, I have lots of tracks, and you know, my list started with 14, it dwindled to 8, it got back up to 10. I'm just going to go with what I feel like right now. So, and no particular order. So, this track, it's a standalone story, and it's not your typical track to close an album. And there's a video for this, and it's almost like a mini movie. And to me, it's like the prime example of Rush when the keyboards were put in the forefront of their music over the guitar solo. So, and this particular song, it doesn't have one, but it has two keyboard solos. The second one being Geddy goes off. He's like, it was almost like the E version of a big fretboard jam. So this one, I think you guys probably know, has all kinds of NASA audio images, aircraft sounds, but in general, the song and the video are just kick-ass. From Signals, the song Countdown.
Feel like we have to like raise our hand if we think we know what it is and get like a, you know, a bonus pick, if you will.
Yeah, it's like name that tune. Yeah. I can get that song in, you know, three descriptors.
That's a great song. That's a great album. Great pick, man. All right, well, my fifth, I'm gonna go back to the 70s, and this album, it was the late 70s. The lyrics are exceptional. They're written by Geddy with a little help from Alex, and it was inspired from an old Gary Cooper movie talking about Cinderella Man. And if we're talking about, you know, fresh approach, this was the first album Rush did outside of Canada. They went over to London, and they're really trying to, you know, play different instruments and really challenge themselves, as you'll see later on in that album. The guitar solo of Alex, it almost goes back to like Fly By Night and Bytor. He's just ripping. He's like, maybe he's in London. He thinks he's Jimmy Page again during No Quarter Live, but absolutely love the Cinderella Man from Farewell to Kings.
When Primus did their Rush tour, that was one that was quite enjoyable to see, to kind of hear Les Claypool singing that one. Cinderella Man, that kind of stuff. Check out some YouTube videos on that.
Aaron, number four.
All right, so number four. I really do hope that I won't be the only one showing Rush's last album some love, because Clockwork Angels was an incredible, incredible record. If you've heard Geddy Lee at any of his speaking engagements, either of the last two, he will stand by it, that Clockwork Angels he feels is their best work. So I'm going with what I think is the best song on Clockwork Angels. Again, played live, but not one that's typically name-checked as one of the top tracks on the album. And for me, it's a beautiful song. It's called The Wreckers. So I'm not sure what everyone thinks about The Wreckers from Clockwork Angels. People really need to listen to these latter-day Rush records because they're so, so, so good. It's a Neil work. It's based on literature. Worked it into the story about a group that would kind of light fires to attract ships, and then ships would kind of crash on the shore, and then they would be able to loop the ships. So just interesting story. There's, you know, anything Neil Reed seems to have been, you know, come spouting out in a song at some point. So beautiful lyrics, beautifully played, soulfully delivered by Geddy. Again, I love Clockwork Angels. It was a fitting swan song for the album, And even though a lot of other songs on that record get name checked, I don't think The Wreckers gets name checked often enough as potentially the best track on that record.
I agree with you, Perrin. That one got, I actually got a little radio airplay down by me in New Jersey. I think it was released as a single, and it got a couple of months of airplay because it was 3.5, 3:45 or so, and it kind of had a simple riff and kind of an accessible song that, I think they tried to plant that one out there for the public.
Yeah, and I'll just give a little hint as to where my list is going to go. Like, I grew up, I was a teenager in the 80s, and I, as much as I love my prog and my Rush and my heavy metal, I love kind of melodic rock, and I'm definitely going to be kind of leaning towards a lot of melodic stuff and some atypical Rush melodic stuff on my list. So Wreckers being the first of those choices.
Martin, what's your fourth?
Okay, I'm going to go with Seven Cities of Gold from Clockwork Angels. I really like this one because I wanted to make a point about, I felt a little dissatisfied with the style of heavy riffing Alex would get into on this record and Snakes and Arrows a little bit. Like when he was heavy, there was kind of like a circular brown sort of bluesy style. And you do get that on this song, but I think this is the best one of that sort. So you've got the note dance part of the riff, but I think what really saves this song and makes it a really cool heavy one is how in the verse you've got some kind of sophisticated chords, and there's like a first half of the verse is one set of chords, and then the second half is like another set of chords. So it goes to another place on it. So that's really cool with this one. And it's got more of a good pocket, whereas on some of the other heavy songs on these last two albums, there's kind of like a bashing claustrophobic quality, but I think there's a good groove to this one. And I really like the lyrics again. And I had a bit of a lyric theme going with my Time in Motion and this, because I feel they're both kind of about the human condition and randomness of life and that sort of thing. But I think this is a cool one. It lightens up a bit for the pre-chorus, then gets heavy on the chorus again. I think this is probably the most entertaining of the trying to be heavy experiments, but their brains are just not wired for heavy rock, I don't think, anymore. That falls away probably back at Caress of Steel in 2112. And when they come back to it, there's kind of like a retro conservative bluesiness that goes on with what they do. But I think this was the best version that you were going to get out of Alex doing that sort of thing.
Good pick. Great pick, actually. And they did the A, B, and C, D set lists. And of course, I went to multiple shows. And that was the one set list I didn't see. So I never got to hear that song play live out of every other one on the tour. So there's another Rain Man tour fact.
But jeez, amazing. Good stuff.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month, so just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
My next track, it's I like to categorize it as one of those non-traditional Rush-sounding tracks, kind of when Getty would describe it as, you know, we have some weirdly odd songs that they're uncomfortable for us and the fans, but that's what we know makes them so unique. And, you know, the opening of this song, it opens with bass chords, right? And they're in focus most of the song. It's kind of a mid-tempo and dark song, yet it has some great melodic passages, but it's a serious song, and I think Getty shines as a vocalist in the song, most importantly, and especially in delivering Neil's storyline with the lyric, "No hero in your tragedy, no glory in your escape." From the song Presto, The Pass, a song about peer pressure and potentially suicidal thoughts. You know, one that, you know, when you see the video or you saw the video images live, you see a teenage boy with his headsets on, looks like he's jumping off a cliff, you see the headsets fall. Kind of a serious song, but a good one.
So I have to challenge. So is The Pass a deep cut?
The album's deep enough that it's a deep cut, right? You know?
And I struggled with that era, the Holds Your Fire, Presto, even Power Windows, saying to myself, okay, here's a lot of these songs. So I would say The Pass is one of my top five Rush songs of all time. And maybe that's why I couldn't call it a deep cut, but there was a video. I kind of remember it getting a lot of radio play. I think it was a single. And my rule was no single, no video, and it could not have been played on multiple tours. And I think The Pass is such a popular concert track, and it was a video and it was a single that I couldn't, among others, I just couldn't put on my list for that reason. Not obscure enough.
That's a great point, because if you really look at it, early Rush, can we agree Rush had like three chapters? You know, the beginning up till Moving Pictures, Signals through Presto, and then the rest.
I'd go to Roll the Bones on that second one. You know, I'd go all the way up to Roll the Bones and then start it again with Counterparts, I'd say.
Okay. Well, the point I'm trying to make is the first part of Rush, longer songs, but less songs. And as they started giving their sound a haircut, shorter songs, more songs, to the point the last chapter, a lot more songs and maybe a little longer, just because of the technology and CDs, yeah, and this and that.
Yeah.
So to defend Metal Walt, it is a deep cut.
But I respect that, Perrin.
That's funny, you know. It's like, yeah, at the beginning it's long songs and then it's short songs, and then at the end it's long songs lots of songs, and then at the end it's both. It's lots of songs and they're long.
And let's be honest, there are no deep cuts to Rush fans. I guess this is ridiculous.
True.
Well, so my number four, I'm right in the middle. So we're in 1984, and I love 1984. This is truly one of the best Rush songs ever written. And it may be, guys, it may be, you'll have to wait to the end, find out my favorite Rush song ever. The lyrics, the music, the vocals, it just moves you in a way that's hard to explain. Wheels will take you around, wheels will cut you down. The guitar solo enters with a harmonic pitch by Alex. It is just, oh, it still gives me goosebumps. And saw the tour, the song Between the Wheels. Absolutely love this album, and it was great because Karen, it does not fall under frequently played. They played it on the tour, but then they dusted it off and brought it out, I think, on R30. Saw the tour in Buffalo in 84, Fastway opened, which was a treat.
You know what, John, it's killing me to hear that Fastway opened for Rush. So talking to two Canadians, here's the one thing about Rush touring in Canada. Rush, Triumph, a lot of the Canadian forefather bands felt this obligation to young Canadian bands, to whoever they were touring from the States, they kind of stayed on their side of the border, and we always got a Canadian band opening for Rush in Montreal, Toronto. So, you know, whereas you guys would get Macaulay Shanker Group or Mr. Big or Fastway or whomever, you know, we would get Voivod, which is fine. I remember Chalk Circle, a Montreal band, Martin might remember, a punk band called the Doughboys. So we would just get a lot of the CanCon. We'd get a lot of the CanCon, but we never got Fastway. We never got MSG. We never got Mr. Big.
We'll be right back.
Well, I started seeing them in the early 80s. So, yeah, I had my share of FM. I had my share of Max Webster. You know what I mean? So this was like the first time. And later on, I'll tell you about the 82 tour. But that being said, let's get up to, we're getting near the top, Perrin's third pick.
I promise I'm going to get off the Latter-day 2000 albums after this, Gal. This is where I'll get off the bus. The much maligned Vapor Trails. And yes, originally it didn't sound good, but folks, if you've never heard the remix of Vapor Trails, that is one album that I would say you got to hear the Latter-day version of it. This song, I didn't think much of until I saw it live. And seeing it live, it just blew me away. And the song is Earthshine from Vapor Trails. I saw the Vapor Trails tour twice. The first time I was living in the Bay Area, it was a place called the Shoreline Amphitheater in Mountain View, California. There's something about, you know, the great thing about living in the States versus Northeastern Canada is you had the sheds, right? And there was just something about seeing Rush, Under the Stars, a song called Earthshine on a beautiful night and everything that represented. That tour was such an emotional tour. And I just think it's something that came back, something just comes over you sometimes. It's the power of a band like Rush. And just knowing what Neil had been through and that comeback aspect of that tour, hearing a song called Earthshine Under the Stars, just pulled me in. And, you know, for me, the Rush in Rio DVD is fantastic, but it's not because of the songs necessarily, even though it was a great performance. It's just, as Rush fans, I think we all get it, right? We're this kind of cult. So I like to put myself in the shoes of these people in Brazil who had followed and loved this band for decades, and the energy coming from the crowd and that Rush in Rio DVD. I never listened to the CD. I don't want to listen to the CD. I will watch the DVD because the sheer joy of the people in that crowd for that show, I'll rewind and watch a crowd shot. There's a shot when they open of Tom Sawyer, of a woman kind of near the front with her hands clapped, looking to the heavens saying, thank you, God, that she's finally getting her wish of seeing Rush. And that's my enduring memory of Rush in Rio. So yeah, I like the Earthshine version from Rush in Rio, without a doubt. But when I think of that tour and that show, it's just the pure emotion of the people who were in the crowd for that show and just seeing their response to never having seen their favorite band and finally getting to do it.
Nice. Nice.
Martin, where are you at three?
Well, first, I want to say my favorite time, our memory with Fastway was seeing those guys open up for Saxon and then Maiden in Spokane, Washington, one of the earlier concerts I ever went to. I think that was probably Peace of Mind tour, but yeah, they were great. And
speaking of that, we didn't get Saxon because we got Coney Hatch.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know.
I weirdly saw those guys, too. I saw Coney Hatch for some reason in Spokane, too, and I can't remember if it was opening for Priest. Would they have been Screaming for Vengeance tour with Priest, Coney Hatch? I think so.
I saw Screaming and Iron Maiden open.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. It was Beast on the Road, Screaming for Vengeance.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so my number three, I went with Between the Wheels. So I'm agreeing with John on this one. That's one I went to and picked out. I love that it's kind of like a, it's almost like a heavy metal reggae song, but it's got the post-punk sort of the big swelling synth sort of washes too. But the rhythm of it is just this big, oppressive, Soviet-sounding reggae song kind of thing, right? But I also feel like, you know, when I was doing this sort of chronologically, I was sort of touched by this one and Time and Motion and Seven Cities of Gold all feeling like that randomness of life. And this one's like, this one feels even more like the Robbie Whelan song than After Image in some respects, because there's kind of car crash imagery and stuff in it, right? I thought that was a little chilling as well. It's almost like there's an echo of that sort of thing going on here. But yeah, love the chords, love the way the rhythms as well, the way you've got the sort of halftime and then it picks up to keep your interest. Last song in the album, it's kind of ominous. And the other reason I wanted to pick this one is this album people kind of forget about. It's another one where it just seems to be skipped over because it doesn't feel quite like it's part of the Notorious second era, and it doesn't quite feel like it's part of the first era ever. That first era seems to kind of end with Signals, and then there's this one standalone album, and then you get that big pairing, right, with Power Windows and Hold Your Fire, and then another couple that feel like a pair. So there's these pairings all over the place, and this one's just kind of like hanging out there, the cold, the Notorious super super cold recording session album, right? So yeah, Between the Wheels, that's my number three.
I love the pair observation. I always felt that way as well. But I did have Signals and Grace Under Pressure as a pair. I've always had Power Windows and Hold Your Fire as a pair. I definitely had Presto and Roll the Bones as a pair. And to a certain extent, Counterparts and Test for Echo. So, you know, it's funny how we talk about three eras, but you definitely get to a point in Rush where there are like, okay, let's do this for a couple albums. Okay, now we've had enough of this. Let's kind of take a bit of a turn, but not a complete 180. Let's just go kind of, you know, 90 degrees and then another 90 degrees and another 90 degrees. Then we almost go full circle at some point.
Yeah.
So definitely agree with the pairings.
And Farewell to Kings and Hemispheres feels like a pair. So some people I think would take Permanent Waves and pair it up with Moving Pictures, but I've always put Moving Pictures with Signals for some reason. And then I think you get a trio with Fly By Night, Caress of Steel, and 2112. Those feel like the first three Kiss albums sort of thing. You know, leading up to the live album kind of deal, right?
Yeah, that's a great analogy, and I'll get there at the end of the show. To elaborate on that, the Signals and Grace Under Pressure, they're like cousins because it's heavy keyboards, and you're right, before Hold Your Fire, great, great track. But my number three pick, we're staying in the 80s, early 80s. This is the last song that Geddy or Alex were given any credit on writing. And all three of the members of this band worked on this together. And I think it's a celebration of how tight the band are, especially when Signals was a breakout album and really a change of direction for Rush. You know, it's obviously Alex got the haircut. They had a little mini Flock of Seagulls look, the skinny ties. They're distancing themselves from the Moving Pictures era. But my number three pick, the Signals album, but the song is Chemistry. And there's chemistry in there. So many clues. The 1, 2, 3, add without subtraction, sound on sound, multiplied reaction. It was a chemistry of the three. They wrote it together. This is, in fine Rush fashion, symbolism of what Rush was. Not many bands have three. For all intents and purposes, were original outside of the Rutsy on the first one. They never really had any friction. There was never anyone leaving. There was never any kind of turmoil or drama in Rush. And the song Chemistry, I think, exemplifies that. They were never afraid to step outside their own parameters for the good of the band. Everything was split three ways, and they were friends. They were three friends to the end.
So no, a little side tale to this. Guys, I'm 53, and the first Rush album I ever bought was Signals. And this is a true story where I had bought Michael Jackson's Thriller. And I think it came out the same year around that time. And I played it, and I was like, okay, I know this cassette, I'm done with it. And I went to my best friend, and I sold it to him. And I raised the money so I could walk 2 miles to Kmart to buy the Signals cassette. And that was my first ever Rush tape, and played the shit out of that one. So, my next pick, this was another tough one for me because I love this album. It could be my go-to Rush album in a weird way, but this song has kind of that Middle Eastern Asian vibe. It seems like Neil was starting to experiment in this period with drum beats and different kind of rhythm in his drums versus traditional, you know, drum tracking. This one also has a lot of poppy keyboards and... it's just got a song that when you're listening to it in the beginning as it opens up, you find yourself doing a bit of foot tapping. Bump, 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 bump. The song is Territories from Power Windows. And what I love about Territories is it has all those weird things of the mid-80s, but then could be the only track on the album where you really hear heavy guitar. And it's not just the heavy guitar, but when Al gets into that part where he just opens up, it's loud, it's in your face, and he's just shredding. And it continues, and the music gets heavy and heavier. Geddy opens up, he really showcases his bass playing there, and who doesn't love that line? Better people, better food, better beer.
I like that album. At first, I didn't like it back in 1985. That's when I was full-bore Motorhead patch on my denim jacket, and... But after, I think it was maybe 10, 12 years ago, when they started playing Marathon Live again, and I revisited it, great choice.
I think it's the talking about those pockets of albums. I don't know, I would pocket that one or pair that one with Grace Under Pressure in my world, but I feel like that one for me is like on the upper echelon. I just like, I think aside from Grand Designs, I love every track on that album. It's just one of those favorites for me.
You know, my pair is Power Windows and Hold Your Fire. And I've always had a hard time with that pair. And I find with age, it's funny, the Oppenheimer movie came out like last year. So, you know, why not listen to the Manhattan Project, right? And as I find myself listening to Power Windows a bit more for whatever reason, because I had seen that movie, I'm like, you know, when I was younger with the Motorhead patch or the Iron Maiden patch, as it were, you know, I had a hard time with it, you know, and I've always liked Marathon for whatever reason, but other stuff on that record I had a really, really, really hard time with. And for whatever reason, with a more aged ear, that I really have a lot more time for Power Windows and Hold Your Fire than I had in the past. So having said that, I'm choosing a song from neither of those records as my number two. But I'm finally gonna go, I'm gonna go a little bit further back than I have been going. I'm gonna go back to Signals. And being a child of the 80s and having spent time in roller skating rinks, being forced to listen to non-metal, you kind of do get an affinity for, you know, you heard Neil particularly in interviews talk about, you know, some, you know, Talking Heads and the Police and just different bands he listened to. But I hear this song, The Weapon from Signals, and that opening kind of keyboard salvo is just for me, you know, I'm from Montreal and heard Safety Dance or Men Without Hats way before anyone else knew about Safety Dance. And then I hear, you know, Human League, and I hear Missing Persons, and I hear all kinds of weird things in The Weapon. And I love that word, weird. I just, you know, if it's one thing that Rush ever did, it's like they kept us on our toes. And, you know, The Weapon for me is just this intoxicating, like I can see it being played at a rave today with kids on ecstasy, and they'd really be getting into The Weapon, and then maybe giant Presto bunnies would be jumping out of them or something. I don't know, but like, but yeah, so I've always found The Weapon, and same thing, if you watch the concert DVD of Grace Under Pressure, because they played it on the Grace Under Pressure tour as well, you just, you know, again, if the skinny ties like you were talking about, but Alex is totally losing his mind, maybe because he needed something more to do, because it's not that much of a guitar-driven song. But yeah, I, for whatever reason, I can't even quite put my finger on it, but this quirky, unconventional beat and the keyboard line and the weapon, intoxicating is the only word I can give it. So I find it a totally engaging, intoxicating song that is really atypical if you're really into early Rush, and even a little atypical if you're into kind of this, the, you know, the time stands still and the easy to listen to kind of stuff. It's like, it's the weapon's poppy, but it's not, it does twist your ear a little bit. And, you know, I've always enjoyed Rush twisting my ear. So the weapon is my oddball deep cut number two.
All right. So my next choice, number four, I'm going to go all the way back to my earliest one here, Beneath, Between, and Behind. And, you know, the whole point with this one was, I wanted to make the point I did in my podcast, my History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff podcast. I think I have an episode in there complaining about song titles, right? How song titles are hard to remember sometimes, and I can never remember the order of those three B words in this one, right? I always have to check, right? So I swear there are bands like Motorhead, Blue Oyster Cult, where you have to stop and put in the little umlaut thing, which takes a long time. So I swear there are bands that are not written about a lot. Wasp is another one where you have to go cap W dot cap A dot S, you know. So I think there are songs that people don't talk about simply because they don't remember the song title. So they just move on to something else. Fly By Night is beautifully recorded, right? It's got really good, powerful guitars. It's got enough bass, enough treble. I think this song gets kind of overlooked a little bit, but it shouldn't. I mean, it's 3 minutes long, but it's very proggy. I mean, people kind of go to Anthem or Bytor as saying, oh, this is Rush kind of inventing the prog thing in a big way, or the prog metal thing. But I think this song kind of gets overlooked. It is very proggy. It's heavy enough. It's absolutely 50% prog, 50% metal. It's Rush inventing prog metal. It's got that great offbeat riff part in it as well. Just really kind of cool lyrics. They're a little bit like Genesis-y, almost British sort of lyrics to the thing. I think they get a lot done in 3 minutes, and they are on their way inventing prog metal. I don't know. Is it a deep enough track to count as a deep track for you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Is it?
Totally.
Good. Yeah.
So my next pick, what am I going to go with here? So, okay, this one, this is an album opener, great album opener, and it's one where we hear Neil counting off as the album opens, and it's got a very memorable drum beat. You guys have played in air drums on this one for sure. It's heavy and melodic. And such great work by Geddy Alex and on the main riff. And this was the album where they really brought back the heaviness in a big way on this one. So this one was in and out of the set list, not overly played live, but I always love this one. And a song to me that never tires out, even 30 years later, off the Counterparts album Animate.
Yeah.
I'm kind of with Perrin on that one.
Okay. I got it. Again, if we were playing Name That Tune, when you said that the Neil counts it out, like, so
yeah.
That's what gave it away. I don't know. It was a video. I'm sure it was a video.
I looked and it was not a video, actually. There was no video.
I grew up on Much Music in Canada. I'm pretty sure it's a video.
They started with Stick It Out, right? That was the advanced single. Animate a video.
I'm going to look on my phone real quick. Sure. Right now.
While you fact check that,
I want to share something to the viewers and to my friends from Canada. We talk about Paris, he did his research, and Martin has his transcribed. I have what I call the vaults. I keep all the stuff. And here is a WCMF concert laminate from 1981, from when they came here for moving pictures. And I still have my pin that I bought at the show. It's all
nice,
all rusty cool. on the back, and it's all legit. So,
Kenny answered my question on the speaking tour.
What was the question?
You know, I kept it really simple. I kind of apologized to him on behalf of everybody, because when he did his previous book tour, everyone was pummeling him with, "Are you guys going to tour again? Are you guys going to do a reunion or a residency?" Whereas he knew that Neil was dying, and we did it. So basically, in my question, I kind of apologized to him, and then I said, "I have a very simple question. How are you doing?" And like Jabe Baruchel, who was the guest host that night, loved it, and Getty actually loved it. So Getty and I had a moment, like we kind of connected there for a sec, and he just walked through that. You know, the writing his book was very cathartic for him in terms of dealing with Neil's loss, and saying that, you know, he'll see when he's done with the book tour that, as he said, maybe he'll get back to his day job and do something with Alex or not with Alex. It was kind of cool just, being in this venue. And the next question is from Perrin Wolfson. I'm like, shit, I wasn't expecting that. And they kind of made you stand up and they put kind of a light on you. So I'm kind of standing up in the middle of this venue with a light on me. And Jay Baruchel is reading my question, which is essentially an apology, just asking, how are you doing? Like, to Getty. So it was kind of...
I love that. That's badass.
Walt, you were doing a little fact check, find out if there was a video for Animate.
It looks like the only thing I can find, it was on the Live from Frankfurt DVD, but never from the official album.
I can swear I've seen it. I'm going on YouTube.
Well, does that mean I get another pick if you guys decline my pick?
Well, the Deep Cut Police will be in touch with you if they find out that you violated the terms of the show.
Regardless, it's an amazing song. So, Deep Cut or not.
If I go on three, I'm off the show.
All right. Well, going into my number two, we're going to go way back to 1976, and we're going to flip the platter over of 2112, because side one, we know it's obviously not a deep cut, but it's, Mount Rushmore of Rush. But I'm talking about the song written solely by Rush founder or guitar player Alex Lifeson. The track is Lessons, and it's to this day when I hear it. You got to remember, you got to realize something, fellas. I got into Rush because I had an older brother. And back when I was 8, 9 years old, I used to look through my older brother's albums and I would pick stuff up and I'd listen to this stuff. And that's how I got mesmerized by Rush. The overall theme of Lessons revolves around the significance of life's lessons and the growth, and the fact that it was always sounded different, and I always knew, like, someone else wrote it. It wasn't Neil. It was just, I just love this song. Let me ask you, Martin, what's your take on Lessons?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it is very uncharacteristic. It's kind of conservative. It's melodic. It's definitely feels like a slight twist on the dependable Louie Louie chords idea, right? You know, when you hear those kind of warm chords put together. It's got a nice lilt to it, a light nice pocket, even though it's light, it's an airy song, but it does have drums. So I think it's pretty cool. And then it breaks into the heavy part. It's a beautifully well put together song.
Is the guy takes on lessons? I know you guys are, you know, later era. Have you ever really gravitated to 2112 like I did?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's still, I mean, even though, yeah, and I'm 52, so I grew up with Rush in the 80s, and I went back to listen to the 70s stuff. I mean, if you ask me to choose what's the best of those 70s albums, I mean, 2112 is regarded the way it is for a reason. You know, my go-to track on 2112 is also not 2112, but it's A Passage to Bangkok. But I love Lessons. I think A to Z. Look, I think you could probably make an argument that 2112 was their first great end-to-end record. I almost exclude the first record because it was something so different. And Farewell to Kings, very good. Maybe a couple little flaws. Caress of Steel, Maligned. I actually love Caress of Steel. I debated putting The Necromancer on my list, and I didn't know if that was deep enough. Because technically, Return of the Prince from The Necromancer, that piece of it was apparently a single. So I said, nah, I have to exclude that. But I think 2112 can make the argument. You know, I mean, it's been documented. That was the Mushroom Cloud record. But, you know, I think a lot of people consider it that because of side one. But I think side two actually has so much merit and isn't talked about enough.
True. It's all true. Aaron, we've been waiting. We're your number one pick. What do you have, my friend?
I think this might be the deep cut of all deep cuts. I don't even know if Rush fans know this song. Again, Child of the 80s. You guys did a hair metal show, right? A deep cut hair metal show yesterday or something like that. You should have had me on that because I would have been happy to talk to you guys about Takedo and Kix and Tora Tora and whoever. I would have been happy to participate in that. Keep me in mind for next time. And if there's one Rush song, for whatever reason, I listen to and say, you know, this could have been an 80s hair metal song. This is like bouncy and poppy and really, really nice. From Roll of Bones, song that is not a single, not a video, from my research, has never, ever been played live. It's The Big Wheel. There's a pop sensibility in that song that it could be a Def Leppard song. You know, if you just rearrange it, it's like an 80s air metal song. And I don't know if Rush ever did anything quite that poppy and bouncy and happy. And so, you know, it's just, it's so different. And I'll put it on. And I guess Getty's voice is a giveaway, but people don't even think it's a Rush song sometimes when they hear it. But I have just had this infatuation with this song for the longest time. And I think it's because, again, I went to high school in the time where, you know, Def Leppard and Bon Jovi and Motley Crue and all that kind of stuff blew up. And I was into the Kixes and the Tora Toras and the Takedos and all that kind of stuff also. And if there's ever a Rush song that ticks my melodic rock box, it's The Big Wheel. but he's pouting. It's not like, honestly, it's that pouty kind of vocal. Like, when has Geddy ever done a pouty vocal? Playing for time. Like, it could be a Whitesnake song. It could be I don't know if that's good or bad. Maybe people are throwing fruit at their screens right now listening to this. I don't know. But, like, it's just so off the beaten path for a Rush song. And I think it's the ultimate deep track because it's different than anything they've ever done. It's on an album that I don't think is that highly regarded by people, even though I love it. And just deliver something very different than what you would expect from Rush.
Aaron, that one's cool pick. But I remember that one. I recall that one. When it gets into, like, the vocal right before the chorus where he says, a big wheel, that kind of thing, it almost doesn't even sound like Geddy. I remember hearing it, and it's like, is there, like, a female singer going along here? Sounds like something else is there.
You say that, and I think the song Prime Mover from Hold Your Fire, that was kind of on my short list also. And just think of, like, the build of that song. You could make a pretty cool heavy metal song out of what's not necessarily a poppy Rush song, but a kind of, you know, really off the beaten path.
It is. It's like total hair metal.
So funny you mentioned that, saying, you know, you'd like to hear a hair metal arrangement of that. I've often thought, like, get you know, some of my super smart heavy metal buddies to try make heavy metal versions of any of the darker chorded, minor chorded songs from, like, Hold Your Fire or Power Windows or Presser or Roll the Bones, like all four of those. I bet you could turn some of those songs into really forceful, sort of cool heavy metal songs. Like, you almost imagine if Rush had these songs and they went into the new wave of British heavy metal, instead of running completely in the opposite direction, they ran in that direction and put songs together that had a fly-by-night sort of arrangement to them. That would be pretty cool. Anytime I'm asked to do a top five of anything, or when I'm doing a top five, you know, a five choices for my History in Five Songs podcast or whatever, I have this rule quite often that I go, I got to include the first thing that comes to mind. So when you first came up with this, I thought, number one is my favorite Rush song of all time. And number two, I think it qualifies enough as a dark track, a deep dive track, because it does seem to get glossed over in the discussion of that album, even though it's a first track on the album. There's not a lot of songs on that album either. I think there's four songs, right? So it's the first track. But I love the recording of this album. It's heavy. This song, I love that it's kind of like got that Tom Sawyer vibe where it's played at a certain slower tempo, but Neil's super busy on it. Like, he does a lot. So that whole thing, how Neil talks about, oh, Tom Sawyer is hard to play correctly, right? That sort of thing. I feel that falls into place with this one too. And again, I love the interesting lyrics about just being just jerked this way or that way by fate. To me, when I got this album as a new release, I was that heavy metal guy too. So Rush was already ticking me off with Farewell to Kings. And when it came to this album, it's like, all right, okay, you know, I'm being a drummer too. And so I'm liking this. They're the only band doing this progressive metal thing, but they're not a heavy band anymore. But to me, this felt like the most heavy metal song on the album, even though it's not particularly heavy metal, but it is a wall of, you know, guitar with the distortion pedal on, right, kind of thing. So it does do that. So yeah, it's my favorite Rush song. I feel like it's a deep enough track to bring up. So my number one is Circumstances.
Rainy
All right. So my final selection, and again, I didn't go in any order. These were just tracks. I'm just going to say the title up front, but I'm going to go with the title track off their last album, Clockwork Angels, because, you know, my experience with this track is, if you remember when they released the album, the song Caravan was released first. It was actually done on the Time Machine tour and BU2B. So you got a tease of the album to come maybe 6 months ahead of time. And I think in the order of the album, I could be wrong, I think they lead with those two songs. But to me, the proper opening of the album is the title track. So, you know, I fast forwarded when I went and bought that CD, but you don't know how the album's going to open. And this is just what you love and appreciate about Rush, because it's a lengthy track, but it's not a get in, get out, 3.5-4 minute rock track, even using the comparison to like an animate, right? It starts off, it's kind of noisy, and there's like all these things going on in the background. It takes 30 seconds. And then Alex comes in with that riff, and it just builds and builds and builds, and then it kicks in. And then, like, you're thinking it's going to be a heavy track, and then it gets super, like, melodic. And you can almost, like, do the analogies to, like, the birds and the angels flying up in the air. And now you're suddenly, like, you're illustrating in your mind what you're believing this song is to be about. You know, it's got a big chorus, and then you just think that's the track, and then halfway through, it goes into this kind of bluesy, swampy mini-segment song, and then back out again. And when they played that one live, I loved it because Neil would kind of kick his drum kit around and spun halfway around the crowd, and he'd go to like this little mini kit to just play that little swampy section, and then he'd spin back around again. So just love that track. It caught me off guard the first time I heard it, and I said, what a ballsy statement to open an album like that.
I love that Clockwork Angels got a little bit of love on this panel, because great, great record. You know, if something had to be their last record, I thought it was a fitting exit for the band. And cool to see three tracks. Look, we're talking about 20 tracks for the four of us, and three of them are from Clockwork Angels. It's pretty cool.
I never really gravitated, and I don't know if Martin shares my opinion on this, of Clockwork Angels. I just thought it was too busy, too cluttered. And you like when those songs came out, that BU for you or whatever that was. It's a
brought up to believe BU2B. Yeah.
Yeah. I listened to it and I'm like, I can't relate to it. I respect you're digging it, but I just can't relate to it.
People have a hard time with those last, you know, the post reunion, for lack of a better word, but Vapor Trails, Snakes and Arrows, and Clockwork Angels. Like, I know people who are like pretty hardcore Rush fans. And they listen to maybe those records once and they just never want to hear them again. And their minds, Rush ended at Test for Echo. For some of them, Rush ended of Counterparts. Like, this, they didn't really like Test for Echo either. Just, you know, I guess with every band, even bands you love, you all have a point maybe that you get off the bus. So I never got off the bus with Rush. But, you know, I think a lot of people got off the bus with Test for Echo, or definitely with the songs that came after they reunited after Neil's tragedies.
Martin, earlier you mentioned Kiss, and Kiss had those three albums packaged together, the originals. Well, back when I was a kid, Rush did the same thing. They had the three, and it was called Archives. It was the first three albums. And I remember getting Archives, and I was digesting Rush at a rate that was not healthy. I was listening to this, and what really grabbed me, the first album is great. But when I got into Fly By Night, there's just something about it. Maybe it's a little more acoustic. Just love the album. And it really came into focus, guys, after I listened to the Geddy Lee book, My F in Life. And just the imagery that he gave to us about the band touring constantly, leaving home, being away from their family, never giving up on their dreams. And you could just visualize them going to Cleveland, driving all night. Next thing you know, they're in Toledo, driving all night. Then next thing you know, they're in Kentucky. They're just all over the place. And that's what this song was written. All three of them wrote that. And it was about touring. It was about leaving their families. It's about, you know, pursuing the dream. And the writing credits go to all three guys, even though Neil just came into the band at the time and took over everything. And a little fun fact, doing research on this, and I never realized it after listening to this, there's two acoustic guitars playing the intro. My number one deep track of Rush is the song Making Memories.
So we just keep smiling, move on with every day, and try to keep our thoughts away from home. We're traveling all around, it's time to settle down and satisfy our wanderlust to roam.
You know what that song reminds me of? It reminds me of, first, more than anybody, April Wine. And then also, you could throw that into the Trooper Prism Triumph basket, that one.
And they had to have been exposed to all that stuff, given the age they were and what they had to be listening to when they were in Canada anyway, because that stuff was just all over the Canadian airwaves. You couldn't escape it, you know? So I'm sure, you know, there's something there.
All right, well, so that's our five deep cuts. Listeners, agree with us, disagree. I'm sure we'll get some engagement on this, but in any case, these are our interpretations. This is what it means to us. And it's great, like Perrin said. Obviously, I sided a little bit on the older stuff, but you guys brought up the back end, the later career. And Martin, you're both. Cool to hear that Signals is your favorite album. So,
yeah, I would just say shows like this are great. Thanks for the invite, because it's going to make me go back and listen to some tunes I haven't listened to in a while. And I would encourage to anyone listening, watching, guys, you know, if you've never heard The Big Wheel, go listen to it. If you've never heard Countdown, go listen to it. If you've never heard Lessons, go listen to it. It's like, no matter how old we are, there's still discoveries out there that for whatever reason we just missed. So shows like this always serve as a reminder about how deep the well runs. So tap into that well.
Well said, and that's what we call here at Metal Mayhem ROC, our heavy metal homework. Hey, just remember to get up to the website, sign up for our email newsletter, join our community, and always remember to keep it heavy. For my guests, Perrin Wolfson, Martin Popoff, my co-host Metal Walt, I'm the Vernomatic, and we will see you soon.
Metal for life.
Thank you for listening to Metal Mayhem ROC. Check out our website at metalmayhemroc.com for information on podcasts, archives, links to all our live radio shows, and all sorts of info. Please like, follow, and share with everyone, even your non-metal friends. And always remember to keep it heavy.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.